I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's April 12th, and we have a lot to talk about. Last week, I attended the American Academy of Neurology annual meeting in Seattle, Washington. And today, I'll share an overview of what I saw and what I heard. We'll also hear from this year's winner of the John Distel Prize for Multiple Sclerosis Research, Professor Xavier Montalban. But before we get to my conversation with Professor Montalban, there are a few other things that you should know about. The American Academy of Neurology, or AAN, held its first in-person conference in 2 years, and you couldn't help but notice how incredibly happy everyone was to be meeting face-to-face. The two-year gap in in-person meetings was, of course, the result of the COVID-19 pandemic. So it was fitting that one of the first major presentations at the conference featured three experts who provided a sobering overview of the many different ways that the COVID-19 pandemic affected their work and the work of their colleagues. Dr. Nina Shore, the Deputy Director of the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke, did a very thorough job explaining all the ways that medical research has been impacted by the pandemic. Workforce issues that were created by people developing COVID, people that weren't symptomatic but had tested positive for COVID, and people who were forced to quarantine because they were exposed to someone else who had tested positive for COVID, led to shortages in laboratory staff, hospital staff, and support staff. There was even a shortage of the lab animals that are used in preclinical studies. And the shortages didn't only affect people and animals. Laboratories faced the same supply chain shortages that the rest of the world was facing. And when laboratories don't have the supplies and equipment that they require in their work, less work gets done. Dr. Merit Kutkiewicz, the chief of neurology at Massachusetts General Hospital, acknowledged the challenges and focused on the potential upside of having to pivot due to the pandemic. Dr. Kutkiewicz talked about how the pandemic had accelerated major initiatives to better streamline, lower costs, and increase access to clinical trials, and how the rollout of telemedicine was accelerated by the pandemic. Dr. Kutkiewicz also underscored the necessity of having regulatory guidelines adapt as quickly as the medical and research communities were adapting to new ways of doing things. Dr. Brenda Banwell, the chief of the Division of Neurology and co-director of the Neuroscience Center at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, talked about how the pandemic had affected clinicians themselves. She pointed to a study of physicians in Massachusetts that showed that during the pandemic, women who were physicians were forced to handle more non-physician duties, including childcare and homeschooling, while men tended to stick to their typical physician-related responsibilities. Dr. Banwell pointed out how taking women physicians out of the workforce for the past 2 years will have a serious impact on academic promotion and career advancement. Dr. Banwell also pointed to a 2021 survey that showed an increase in workload throughout hospital neurology departments, leading to 50% of those survey respondents reporting that they were experiencing feelings of burnout. And that's not the condition you want your neurologist to be in when they're discussing your treatment plan with you. If we've paid any attention at all to the world around us over the past 2 years, we've seen and heard stories about the mental health issues experienced by so many of our frontline workers. Hearing this detailed presentation that so clearly illustrated how the pandemic has impacted everything from clinical research to clinical practice really drove home the point that in many different and some unexpected ways, we're going to be feeling the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic for years to come. Also at the AAN meeting, The results of a 2.5-year phase 2 extension study of evobrutinib were reported, and those results showed that long-term treatments with evobrutinib was safe and effective in reducing the relapse rate in adults with relapsing forms of MS. Evobrutinib is one of a new category of disease-modifying therapies called BTK inhibitors. These therapies work by blocking the activity of a specific protein called Bruton's tyrosine kinase. This protein activates certain types of immune cells which drive inflammation in MS. And evobrutinib is an oral therapy that's designed to slow or halt neurodegeneration in people living with MS. We've previously talked about the positive outcome of the phase 2 clinical trial for evobrutinib involving 267 adults with relapsing MS. Of those 267 trial participants, 213 chose to continue participating in this open-label extension study. In this study, all of the 213 participants were given a 75 milligram dose of evobrutinib once a day for 48 weeks, followed by 75 milligram doses twice daily. Previous data from this study showed that the benefits were sustained for 2 years. The updated results announced at the AAN meeting showed that the benefits were sustained for at least 2.5 years. And what's especially interesting is because evobrutinib is selective in the immune cells it eliminates, 81% of the study participants had normal levels of antibodies, which are produced by B cells, even though B cell counts were maintained at low levels for at least 2 years. Evobrutinib is being developed by EMD Serono and is being tested in more than 1,800 participants in 2 identical phase 3 clinical trials that are currently in progress. We can expect to learn the results of these phase 3 trials in late 2023. We also heard some interesting analyses of the phase 3 clinical trial for ublituximab, an experimental anti-CD20 monoclonal antibody that works like Ocrevus and Kesimpta, reducing inflammation by destroying B cells. Ublituximab is administered every 6 months in a 1-hour infusion. And at AAN, scientists presented several post hoc analyses from the phase 3 clinical trials, which tested ublituximab against Aubagio. Now, a post hoc analysis is an analysis of data from a clinical trial after the trial has ended. And in examining data from the phase 3 clinical trial, it was shown that a significant number of study participants who received ublituximab experienced an improvement in their level of disability. Beyond mild improvement in their EDSS score, 11.4% of the study participants who were given ublituximab experienced an improvement of 20% or more in the 9-hole PEG test, which measures manual dexterity, compared to about 5.6% of the study participants who were given Aubagio. Scientists also analyzed an outcome called No Evidence of Disease Activity, or NEDA, that's N-E-D-A. NEDA is defined as no relapses, no new brain inflammation or new and enlarging lesions on MRI scans, and no confirmed worsening of disability. Of the study participants who received ublituximab, 44.6%, almost half, demonstrated no evidence of disease activity 96 weeks into the study, compared to 12.4% of the participants who were given Aubagio. During the AAN conference, Dr. Steven Hauser was recognized by the American Brain Foundation when he was awarded this year's Scientific Breakthrough Award. This award recognizes work of an individual or a team whose research has contributed to advances in the care of people living with MS or other neurological disease. Dr. Hauser is a professor of neurology and the director of the University of California, San Francisco Weill Institute for Neurosciences. His research, identifying B cells as the cells that play a major role in MS by attacking the myelin that protects the nerves in the central nervous system, well, that research led to the development of B cell therapies like Ocrevus and Kesimpta. In addition to announcements and awards, there were three other, what I'll call overarching themes that I heard repeated in a number of different meetings, conversations, and presentations throughout the AAN conference. One of these themes was focused around the need to find ways to communicate complex science to the patient community. Research is moving faster than ever before, and we're seeing the rate of scientific discovery accelerate right before our eyes. But as the science becomes more complex, explaining it in easy-to-understand terms becomes more important. I guess I don't have to point out the obvious here when I say that I think about this literally every day. It's one of the main reasons that I started this podcast. I was hearing about great work being done, encouraging research outcomes taking place in laboratories all around the world. But that information wasn't being translated into anything that a non-scientist could hope to understand. And I believe that if we could explain some of that science by making it easier to understand, more people affected by MS might feel a bit more encouraged about the future. So, as I said, I think about this all the time, and I'm glad that a lot of really smart people are thinking about it too, because it's going to take a lot more than this podcast to consistently reach the MS community with the kind of news and the kind of accessible language that people affected by MS are entitled to. And in what you can think about as a related theme, I continued hearing a lot of conversation about the value and importance of shared decision-making between a patient and their neurologist. It seems to me that if a patient is going to be a partner in their own treatment, they need to do a little bit of homework so that they're reasonably well-informed. You can't participate in a conversation with your neurologist if you don't understand what your neurologist is talking about, and you can't form intelligent questions if you don't understand what it is you're hearing. An informed patient community requires that information be provided in a format that's easy to understand. Communicating that information in a clear, concise, and understandable manner provides a necessary foundation for effective shared decision-making to actually take place. There was also plenty of conversation at the AAN meeting around the challenge of increasing clinical trial participation, especially among members of underserved minority populations. I was glad to hear these conversations taking place at this meeting. As some of you regular listeners know, this is a topic that we've talked about often on this podcast. We know that many Black people experience a more severe disease course compared to white people. And evidence shows that some disease-modifying therapies don't seem to work the same way for Black people who are living with MS. Other evidence points to a different disease course for members of the Latinx community. So if we're going to offer the best treatment for everyone who may be living with MS, we need to have members of minority communities participate in clinical trials. Otherwise, researchers won't have an opportunity to understand how a specific disease-modifying therapy is going to affect members of these minority communities. This is a problem that can be fixed, and I'm glad it's getting the attention and the activity that's going to lead to better, more inclusive clinical trials. Finally, the third theme that I heard frequently over the course of last week's AAN meeting was the need to care for the caregiver. There's a growing understanding that when the caregiver is feeling supported, the person with MS experiences a better quality of life. In other words, the road to the best MS patient outcomes runs through the MS caregiver. Because MS is a long-term and progressive illness, being a caregiver or care partner for someone living with MS is a role that's likely to change and even increase over time. Having access to the kinds of support resources that will help maintain a caregiver's own emotional equilibrium, that will prevent burnout, that will solve the real-world problems that caregivers face and support the caregiver's own quality of life. These are the things that contribute to the best possible patient outcomes. As a former caregiver myself, I'm thrilled to see and hear this conversation taking place among more people, companies, and organizations than ever before. And I wonder whether this focus on the caregiver may be one more outcome of the pandemic. Over the past 2 years, millions of people have become caregivers for the very first time, and millions more have recognized the importance of the role that caregivers play. You can be sure we'll be talking more about caregiver support in future podcast episodes. One more thing that takes place each year at the American Academy of Neurology annual meeting is the awarding of the John Distel Prize for Multiple Sclerosis Research. The Distel Prize is awarded to recognize outstanding research that advances our understanding of MS. And in a moment, we'll be joined by this year's recipient of the Distel Prize, Professor Xavier Montalban. Professor Montalban received this year's award in recognition of an amazing body of work that's contributed in so many ways to what we know about multiple sclerosis today. In a moment, we'll meet my guest, Professor Xavier Montalban. Each year at the American Academy of Neurology annual meeting, the National MS Society and the American Academy of Neurology award the John Distel Prize for Multiple Sclerosis Research. The Distel Prize is awarded to recognize outstanding research that advances our understanding of MS. And joining me is this year's recipient of the Distel Prize, Professor Xavier Montalban. Professor Montalban is being recognized for far-reaching contributions to understanding, diagnosing, and treating MS. He was a pioneer in systematically collecting data from people at the earliest stages of MS, and over time, creating a library of information about the evolution of MS that continues to provide novel insights and new leads. Professor Montalban has led several important clinical trials of disease-modifying therapies, including a trial of ocrelizumab that resulted in the first approval of a therapy for treating people with progressive MS. Professor Montalban is chair of the Department of Neurology and director of the Multiple Sclerosis Center of Catalonia at Vall d'Hebron University Hospital and chief of the Neuroimmunology Research Group at Vall d'Hebron Research Institute. Welcome to the podcast, Professor Montalban, and congratulations on being named the 2022 recipient of the John Distel Prize for Multiple Sclerosis Research.
Thank you very much indeed, John.
Your work on the natural history of MS has informed the development of the McDonald Diagnostic Criteria for MS, which is the global standard that neurologists rely on to diagnose MS. And that may be a good place to start our conversation. Why is MS so tricky to diagnose?
Well, my old teachers told me that MS could be considered the chameleon of the neurological pathology because, you know, you can have everything you can imagine. So sometimes it's very difficult to make the diagnosis properly. And MS offers you quite a large number of opportunities to make mistakes. That's why, you know, we have to be very careful and have a very good diagnostic criteria.
When I introduced you, I mentioned that you led a clinical trial of ocrelizumab, and that led to the availability of Ocrevus, the first DMT approved for treating progressive MS. More recently, you were principal investigator in the phase 2 clinical trial for evobrutinib, a potential treatment for relapsing remitting MS. Now, evobrutinib is an oral disease-modifying therapy. It actually represents a new category of disease-modifying therapy called BTK inhibitors. Can you help us understand what a BTK inhibitor is?
Yes, as you said, John, BTK inhibitor is a novel class molecule to treat patients with MS. BTK inhibitors have a dual action. On one hand, on B cells, on the other hand, on innate cells, macrophages, microglia, probably as well. So the hope is apparently BTK inhibitors can cross the blood-brain barrier, and our hope is that through those effects on these innate cells may perhaps decrease the progression of the disease. And that's why we are so excited in testing BTK inhibitors in multiple sclerosis.
When would a neurologist think about recommending evobrutinib to their patient? And what are, maybe it's the same question, what are some of the advantages of evobrutinib compared to other DMTs?
Up to now, I have to say that we have just two trials trying BTK inhibitors in MS. So still, we need much more evidence. There are a number of large phase 3 trials going on. I can't remember the exact number, but 4 molecules are now in that situation. So I guess that in the next 2, 3, 4 years, we will have a lot of evidence, a lot of data, and we will be able to, you know, imagine where these molecules fit better. But I imagine that I speculate a little bit, and I'm going to speculate. Imagine that you have a patient who is not very active, is active but not very active, and has some degree of progressive disease. I think BTK inhibitor could be one perfect option there, or in mild patients from the very beginning of the disease. So quite a number of possible indications for BTK inhibitors.
One of the unique aspects of the clinical trial for evobrutinib is that EMD Serono, the pharmaceutical company developing the drug, collaborated with the Accelerated Cure Project for MS and their iConquer MS people-powered research network. And through that work, the perspectives of people living with MS were integrated into the design and implementation of the clinical trials. How important is having that patient perspective reflected in clinical trial design and implementation?
Well, I yesterday during my lecture, I said exactly that. So it's not just having the patient with MS in the center of the decision-making process. It's more than that. So a patient should be with us at the same table, making decisions with us about the research, about the design of the trials, and there is no other way, in my opinion, to move forward.
Well, I was just about to ask you about the role of the patient in shared decision-making. I think that's settled science here today. We're here in Seattle at the American Academy of Neurology annual meeting, and there's a lot of research being presented and discussed. When it comes to MS research, what's especially interesting? What excites you today?
I think there is one component of the MS research, which is prevention, prophylaxis, and prevention of disease. And I'm talking about, I don't know, vitamin D. I'm talking about microbiota, about the smoking, about the exercise, all these aspects that could be instrumental in decreasing the incidence and therefore the prevalence in the long term of multiple sclerosis. I'm very excited about that. I think in the MS centers, we are now implementing this sort of offices or clinics led by nurses many times, just trying to treat not only the patient but the family. You have a mother or a father with MS, you have to take care of the children, and you have to avoid them to start smoking, just feed, don't be overweighted when they are teenagers, et cetera. So it's an aspect of the disease that excites me very much. And then, of course, the personalized treatment. We are a little bit far away from that, but the use of pharmacogenomics and other genetic tools to identify which is the best drug for one individual. I think that's very exciting. I don't have to tell you, John, you know that much more than I do, how important is the progressive MS gap. We have a black hole there, and we are trying to fill it up.
Well, Professor Xavier Montalban, thank you for the remarkable body of work that you've already created and the work that you continue to do to improve the lives of people living with MS. Congratulations again on being named this year's winner of the John Distel Prize for MS Research. And thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you very much. You're very welcome, John. Thank you.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/241. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.